a lot of people, like when things are going well, people don't acknowledge God. And now that all this is happening, God is the first person that they call upon.
Yeah.
So God could be presenting all this for people to call upon him and to acknowledge him.
Yeah. That's the irony. Yeah? People who don't think about God, they are the first one to talk about God when things go wrong. Anything else? Any other thoughts on this?
I thought about Matthew 24, the verse that said, wars and rumors of wars. How the disciples are asking about the signs of the end times, and Jesus says, don't let people deceive you. Many things will happen. Don't be troubled. These things have to happen, but the end isn't yet. Nation rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There should be famines and pestilences and earthquakes. All these are just the beginning of sorrows. So I think it's not a specific judgment. I think it's just part of
the sorrows.
Okay.
Yeah, God's already said it's going to happen. Yeah. You can't say that this is the mark of the beast now, because that's not going to happen in our, like, while we're on here on earth. That's part of the revelation, yeah. Or the tribulation, sorry.
I mean, people are divided over this, whether this was a specific judgment for the disobedience and choosing to go after false gods. You can see the similar idea in the Old Testament and throughout the history. You can see whenever people have gone bad or bad to worse, God intervening and judgment. So we have examples there, but then the Christian leaders are divided on this topic. Like whenever something goes wrong, it could be a judgment. We don't know. We'll never know. But as you say, Bible is clear on these things. Things are going to get worse. Plagues and pestilences are earthquakes and famines and all kinds of stuff. It's coming. If this is not part of it, then just imagine how worse it's going to get. So Bible is clear about that. But the one thing that we can all agree on is this is a call to repentance. To think about God, to take God seriously, to take his word seriously. So that is something that we can all agree upon. Whether we agree that this is a judgment, specifically judgment from God or not, when things go wrong, when things like this go wrong on such magnitude, then it kind of brings us to our knees. That's the Christian response. It should bring us to our knees. It doesn't matter what our beliefs are on the topic, but such pain, such suffering, it always humbles us. We just cry out to God for mercy, for help, for salvation, for deliverance, for healing. So those are the responses, that Christians and you and I, have to have the proper perspective on this. So anything else anybody wants to add to this? It's a big topic. Evil and suffering, they're not easy topics to answer.
I think everyone's answers are correct. The fact that it's worldwide and it's worldwide sin, but I think it has also something to do with dividing and making people recognize, like, the fact that our leadership will fail us because there's so much secular leadership, and it's meant to bring out into the open the people that are willing to let this go on as long as it's going on. With poor management, and we're deceiving the public of what it really, where it started and where it's going to end. I believe they have more answers, but the secular government doesn't want us to be to fellowship as Christians. They tried; it was used to divide or to separate the church gatherings, and that's why I believe that it is a judgment, and that's. There's so much involved in it, but it's meant for us to recognize now who will fail us worse in the future, and then we have to come together as a Christian church and not be divided as all these things come in the future, because they're going to be way worse in the future. Right. So
interesting you say that. Yeah.
It covers the topic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, interesting you say that. This has been such a interesting topic, a divisive topic. even between the churches and church pastors, and what to do, how to respond, and stuff like that. I kind of, was reading this online and from different churches, from different pastors, and what they had to say. So I kind of put together some of their responses, and then we'll go from there. It kind of ties in with what you were saying, all right? Yeah, absolutely.
I was really troubled with everything going on. It's probably been a couple months ago, but I found this in Isaiah, and it was comforting. In Isaiah 8, it says, "Do not say conspiracy concerning all this people they call conspiracy, nor be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled. The Lord of hosts, him shall be hallowed. Let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. He will be a sanctuary." And then the following chapter, so like all the conspiracy theorists out there, and I kind of got really caught up in a lot of it. My family, we've got this text thread, and every day I'm getting all kinds of things. And a lot of it I believe. I do think that there is evil going on, and there's just this battle that we can't see. But then in Isaiah 9:6, and we've all heard this, every year we hear this, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given." But I think I always gloss over this, "And the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end." So I did a breakdown of all those words, and the government on his shoulder, so like the government, I know it's talking about maybe his heavenly kingdom and everything, but I don't know, maybe this is all, it's all under his control. But then the word wonderful, you think about that, there's no negative in wonderful. Like, it can't be bad. So even the stuff that's going on now, he has a good plan for it. Counselor, he's so wise. So even what we think is our wisdom, it's foolishness compared to him. Mighty God, there's nothing he can't do. Everlasting Father, there's no end. There's no beginning. There's no end. A father you can call out to, like, what father wouldn't want to give his children good things? Prince of Peace. So he's our Prince of Peace. And, I don't know, it just brought such comfort at that time when I was really
absolutely
losing sleep over everything.
I don't know. We're going to talk more about the Christian response, the message, that we can bring, phase of COVID and what is out there in the world. There's nothing negative about God. It's going to be wonderful, more than we can ever imagine. It's going to be beautiful, the world that he's going to create. You can compare and contrast, like, if this world is messed up, if this world is sick, if this world has so much pain and suffering, just imagine what this new world is going to be like, that the one that he's going to create. It's being a total contrast of whatever reality that we experience. So it's going to be extremely beautiful and wonderful and marvelous. We can only imagine how it's going to be like. Looking at the government and so many pastors had so many issues with the government control, and you talked about the religious rights being systematically oppressed. So I kind of put together a few things, different pastors and what they had to say. These are quotations from their interviews, their writings. So I'll just read a few here, and then we'll go from there. I don't want to name them, all right? Just their ideas. Actual quotes. "I think that there is an effort on the part of some to use things like this to try to shut churches down." Again, these are all American pastors, right? In our cult society here. "My personal belief is I have faith in God. If God wants me to get COVID, I will get COVID. If God doesn't want me to get COVID, I won't. There is more to be considered than just the physical health. There is also the spiritual health." The other one. "They are downplaying the role that religion plays in the lives of Americans and suggesting it's more important to go to the gym than go to church. There is a very, very fine line between protecting the health and safety of people and protecting the right to worship. If church is as essential to you as a trip to the pharmacy or Walmart, the doors will be open. We will be trusting God to take care of us." This is MacArthur. "There is no circumstance that can cause the church to close. The church is not only a building, but is the bride of Christ and exists to proclaim the truth." This is right after he won the 400,000 lawsuit against LA County. Then the last one. "There is a demonic side to the sentimentalism of saving lives at any cost. Just imagine that, okay? There is a demonic side to the sentimentalism of saving lives at any cost, the ill-conceived crusade against human finitude and the dolorous reality of death. In other words, people will die. Death is a reality, and we are going overboard saving lives. And that itself, there is this evil, that part, you know, where instead of coming to grips with reality that death is part of us, we are just going overboard and shutdown, lockdowns, extended lockdowns, these mandates. So, you know, he was coming heavily against that as well. So I just want to ask you this question, like, what bothers you the most about COVID? I know we all went through, we came to terms with this in on our own personal terms. So Catherine mentioned her, the way she responded to it, and we all were afflicted either by what we heard, what we read, the text messages, the emails, the videos that we watched, the news channels, you know, that was kind of spitting out information and images. So what bothered you the most during this time?
Isolation.
Yes. Okay. That's real. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Everybody was afraid to go anywhere, so you stayed. You know, and unless you have a family.
And you're not supposed to meet anybody.
No, you're not supposed to talk to them. It's a way of separation.
Okay.
I believe it's a tool being used to move all the nations towards globalism.
Oh.
It's also being used to destroy the economy, which is why we have the inflation and everything, too. But I firmly believe COVID is being used by the elites for this very purpose, to control people, to manipulate people. They want a global economy. They want a new world order.
Okay.
And people are willing to give up their liberties for peace and safety, just like Revelation says. They want peace and safety.
Okay. Anything else?
I agree.
What bothered you the most?
Most frustrating thing that I get when people talk about it is their overreaction. People are listening to all the hype and all the fear on the media and they're buying into it instead of looking around them and seeing the reality. They're watching the television and believing it.
A lot of misinformation.
All of the reaction to the information.
Okay.
Or the overreaction.
Reaction, overreaction. Okay.
I watched a lot of television during it. He's being recently retired, and I watched way too much television about it. But with, in one word, I would say my biggest frustration with COVID was Cuomo. his daily reports, you know, saying, well, this is what you gotta do. 3 days before, I watched him say, no, this is what you gotta do, and they're contradictory. I mean, first you had to clean your groceries when you came home. He forgot that he even said that, I guess. You know, take yourself, put it on the counter, wipe it down, move it over here. You know, and then he said the mask didn't help, and then he says you gotta wear two masks, you know. It's just like, I watched way too much of it.
I was going to say, like, just the nonsense of completely contradictory things. And like, when it first started, they said, nobody should be wearing masks. You only need masks for doctors and hospitals. And then everybody needs a mask. And then it even came to our homeschool group where we were pretty much not masking, but then the pastor of the church had a problem with the people not masking. I mean, it was just insane.
After 10 o'clock, you could be somewhere before 10 o'clock, but not after that. COVID didn't affect people that ate food with their drinks. You had to order a meal with it. It was like ridiculous.
I went to the airport and I walked around with an apple. I took one bite out of the apple.
You don't need a mask.
I didn't need my mask if I was holding this apple. And then the kids masking at school, they're sitting at tables. You don't have to have masks on at a restaurant if you're eating, but then the kids are sitting there learning and they have masks on.
Right.
So there's a lot of confusion with the mandates.
Brainwash.
Yeah.
You know, so much stuff in people's minds about it. People just staring at the TV every day. What's happening next? What's going on? It's a shame.
Yeah.
Checking the numbers, like how many today, and
Yeah.
With me working from home, I haven't had to follow too much of those quote unquote mandates, and it's like I go out and it's like you're getting too close to doing something wrong.
All right. We're going to come back to that, as to our response. But there was also, Josh talked about information and the reaction, the overreaction to it. And there was also a lot of, this was very interesting when I was reading. So a lot of misinformation was targeted specifically towards the Christians on social media. I don't know who does it, I don't know why they do that. But this was an article run by the Washington Post that how the religious-themed misinformation. It's not misinformation, but religious-themed misinformation. Specifically targeted at Christians. And that was interesting for me. I'll just read a couple of them, and we'll just hear your response. Again, there are no right and wrong answers, you know, just how we feel, how we react to these things, and then we'll go from there. Mask mandates and vaccines are the marks of the beast, as foretold in the book of Revelation. If you go on YouTube and then type in vaccines or mark of the beast, you will see so many videos and so many pastors giving 30, 40 minute sermons on this topic. Which means there was a need to address this topic in the first place. Yes.
That was because of the chip they put in when they gave you a shot.
Okay. So that they can track you down. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Thoughts? Mark of the beast. Frozen, I mean, fallen against. I mean.
One of the things that was interesting is, as far as I know, this is the first time where you had to get a card. Saying that you were immunized, and now you're being forced to show up places.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Mark of the Beast, a little far stretched maybe, okay. But when Bob's talking about Mark of the Beast, you're going to need that to do buy and sell, mm-hmm. You need that to do just about anything. And it's like, now you need your COVID card to go across the border, or get on airplanes. I mean, sure, we had passports and stuff before, but now it seems to be a hit more,
mm-hmm.
more at home.
Okay.
Or work a job, hold a job you need it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's pretty far reaching.
Yeah. How are people going to get a job when you got to have these shots? And you know, people want to work.
Right.
A lot of people don't want to get these shots.
Right.
You know, same with me. And that, you know, so I trust in the Lord for everything. And it's just that
yeah.
Work.
The interesting part is like how this was targeted to the Christian community. Like these are Christian, understanding of the end of the world. You quote a Revelation, Mark of the Beast, specifically targets, Christian people, and how this, this kind of information is sent out, targeting Christians, one way or another, whether we go for it or not. These are very systematically, done. They're not just accidents. Somebody just kind of, blurts out something. No, these are targeted ads and informations that were sent to the Christian groups, which is on social media. Again, Mark of the Beast. There are so many people who say so many different things. But one thing I was kind of reading on that was Mark of the Beast. You will know when you get it. Like you, the 666, there is no ambiguity when you take the Mark of the Beast. Like you pledge allegiance to the Mark of the Beast. So it's not a symbol. It's not symbolic. It is a definitive, concrete proof that you sign allegiance to the Antichrist. So that is something comforting. The vaccines. I mean, they're not symbolic. It might be the pattern. The structure is there, the enforcement and all those things, but Mark of the Beast is more concrete, it's more sinister, where you pledge allegiance to the enemy outright. There is no masking that. Yes.
I hope my thoughts will be somewhat collected in saying some of this, because I've had a lot of people ask me that question, and just in private.
Yeah.
And so a lot of these discussions happen not on a large platform, it's not being preached on, certainly. Just one-on-one, people say, what do you think about this? And just as I understand the Mark of the Beast in Revelation, and I know there's a lot of stuff swirling around out there, but to your point, it's not something that a Christian will do.
All right, so take that first off. I mean, if you are you, if you belong to the beast, you are his. You belong to him. Also, there in the next chapter of Revelation, it says that those that belong to Christ have the mark of Christ on them. So what does that mean? I do believe that it's a spiritual thing. I do not believe it's going to be a physical mark that marks everybody out. It has to do with your salvation. And I, as a Christian, cannot lose my salvation. Therefore, I will not have the mark of the beast. And so you've got Christians, genuine Christians, who have been vaccinated. Therefore, it is not the mark of the beast. I mean, it's as simple as that to me. I mean, granted, there is a mark of the beast. All that's very real. But I believe it concerns your salvation and your allegiance, who you belong to. Do I belong to Christ, or do I belong to some sort of sinister, demonic world power? I don't belong to them. Therefore, I will not have the mark of the beast on me. And I'm not going to be tricked into it. I'm not going to stumble into it. I'm not going to be ignorantly wandering into it. I can't. Christ protects me. My hope is in him, not in my decision making. My salvation was what he did for me, not what I did for me. Therefore, I cannot lose. And so I just, so a lot of that conversation just seems to get Christians really fired up over things they don't need to get fired up over if you belong to Jesus.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for that response. That was interesting why so many pastors were on YouTube posting these video messages, because people were asking, like you said, they had sincere doubts whether this is this that, you know. So, and the other one is, if you wear a mask, you don't have faith in God, or you're scared of dying. This is what I didn't make this up. I mean, I just found it out, okay? I'm just giving you what I read. If you wear a mask, you don't have faith in God, or you're scared of dying. Or maybe I'll give one more, and then you can commonly, because there's no time there. Vaccines have aborted baby parts, and therefore a Christian should not take it.
What was it?
Vaccines have aborted baby parts, and therefore a Christian should not take it.
Johnson vaccine uses cloned stem cells from a 14-month-old male, and I assume
14 weeks.
I guess if you distinguish between abortion and murder, the kid's still aborted at 14 months.
No, that's but, taking a toddler walking around.
Yeah, I know. I'm
it's
just,
still a child.
Okay, maybe I read it wrong.
Well, didn't President Bush start that first without it, taking the cells and non-born, things like that?
After the 80s, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, he started all it. Whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's not even in Bush. Like it happened.
It was from a long time ago.
Yeah.
So this is generations beyond.
To Josh's point, the Johnson & Johnson, they used a fetal cell lining from a baby in Netherlands, not even in America, from somewhere in Netherlands. So I don't know how Bush was involved in Netherlands. So I'm not sure on that. But it was in the 80s. Yeah. We'll talk about cell lining in a bit. But any quick response to this? Yes.
So if we're against it for the COVID shot, would that make all childhood vaccines? Because they're in all of them.
Absolutely. That's a great point.
All of us pretty much have been.
Yeah. Every vaccine, like all vaccines, including cancer research, they all use cell lining. What is cell lining? I'm not sure. I'll just kind of read up on these things. So these are not exactly baby parts, but cells that are cultured and harvested in a lab. So they got some DNA from this fetal line, this baby. I don't know how old was the baby, unborn, in 1980s. And then they use these cells and they grow it in a lab. It's not the actual from the baby, but these are cells that were got from the baby that are cultured in the lab setting. And apparently it's a very common medical practice in order to test the medicine. So Johnson & Johnson used that. Only Johnson & Johnson used that. But these are cell lining, not actual cell from harvested from the baby itself. But these are cell lining that were grown and cultured and harvested in a in a lab setup. So.
So,
you don't want to go there?
Well, there, I watched an interview. The doctor's name was Stanley Plotsky or Plotskins or something. He's the one that's responsible for all these abortions. Have you seen it?
No.
Okay, so...
Next week is abortion. Maybe you should come. We're going to talk about abortion.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, in the nursery. I'll try to...
You might be best.
this is part of the issue. It's not just one baby. They had to go through multiple babies. The one doctor said he had like over 150 babies. They actually have to, it's called a water bag abortion. They actually have the baby come out when they're alive. They have to cut them up while they're still alive. Tongues, slice them, take all their organs out while they're alive to have the specimen fresh.
Wow.
So hundreds of babies for that one vaccine. You know, they had to go through, and there's a number, like it's MC37, whatever it is. That means that's the 37th baby that they killed trying to get that baby, that specimen perfect. But like, I just thought, like, when I heard him testifying, there was no remorse in him. There was it was just like a dead soul telling, just matter of fact, we cut him open. And they said, what tissues did you get? And he just went down the list. Spleen, ears, tongue, eye,
I don't want to go into next week's topic, but this is what I had it in my mind. I was thinking about this topic. The aborted babies, we don't give a name for them. Like, they are medical waste. They are thrown in dumpsters. Their own way of trashing stuff, the medical waste. That's how it's done. It's a medical waste. As long as you don't bring the baby home, it goes to medical waste, all medical waste. So that's interesting how we'll go talk more about that next week as well. How it kind of plays into the whole industry of abortion. And no wonder it was banned. That practice was banned right after that, I believe. Do they still do that?
Planned Parenthood still, they're uncovering all kinds of things
right
now.
Okay.
This current day,
okay.
They're buying baby parts, and it's like thousands of dollars.
It's for medical research?
Yes.
Well, the University of Pittsburgh just recently was found out to have done this. I mean, this is in the last 6 months. The University of Pittsburgh right down the road is buying, aborted baby parts.
But there's so many people who are going undercover to get these doctors and abortionists on video. They're suing those people who have the video instead of following up with the people who are selling the baby parts.
Yeah. Well, and it's government research as well. I mean, this is taxpayer dollars that gets all this as well.
Yeah.
So. It's not just one baby. I want to make that clear because it's like one baby is enough, but this is thousands of people. Like, it's going on today.
Wow.
It went on back then to get these vaccines, and it's still going on today.
That is sad, and next. All right, we'll go back to the history of plagues and how church has responded. This is not the first time church has confronted a situation like plague. Like, how did the early church handle a plague or any other such global, devastation? Any thoughts on that?
In the houses when people were sick.
Come again?
Some of them went into the houses and served where
people
were sick.
Yeah.
The Emperor Julian or somebody like that was talking to his advisor and said, these Christians, they even take care of our sick. Like, they don't just stop with their own. They serve even those who are dying among us. They take better care of our people than we do.
Yeah.
That's the mindset of somebody who, does it mean that we don't mind, that we mind death? We are wise in the way that we handle life, but we don't see the life that we have the same way that a worldly person does.
Yeah.
We don't cling to it as if it's our own. It belongs to Christ. And so we are willing to live and go and do dangerous things and to expose ourselves to things because we know that we're trying to serve people for an eternal life, not just here on earth. So.
The secular world knows what philanthropy is. They, and their generosity resulted in monuments, in artistic paintings. So that's where they stopped. They were not sacrificial. I mean, when a plague like this hit so many times in history, you can always see the well-to-do, the rich, including the physicians, they all would run away to their farmhouses, away from the plague-like situation, away from the trouble, away from the problem, for their own safety. That's how it's always been, except for the Christians, as you mentioned. Like, they were the ones who were out there on the streets serving the poor, bringing them in, you know, and taking care of them. Either they got better or they died along with them. So this has been the history of Christianity and church, especially in the Roman world. And then I also found Martin Luther. In his time, he also had to go through a plague. And then his response, in 1527, the plague struck Wittenberg, the university town where Martin Luther lived. And Luther refused to leave, it seems. And then this was a time when a lot of theologians even came up with flight theology and why it is so, it's Christian ethics to run away, you know, from the plague. And they had their own debates, like we have our own vaccines and mask debates. And Luther refused to leave. He chose instead to go out on the streets caring for the sick and the dying. And then this is what he says. He says, he regarded the pandemic as a temptation that tests and prove our faith and love. Two things. A plague tests our faith and love. Our faith in that we may see and experience God, because we got to bring that into perspective of who we are and then what God is doing, what is God is up to, you know, in the midst of the plague. Our faith is tested. Our faith becomes strong. All right. We just cry out to God for mercy, for protection, for deliverance, for help. All right. And that is one aspect. The other one is our love. And our love in that we may recognize how we should act toward our neighbor. So this is a test of our love as well. Like, how do you show your love? How do you love as Christ loved us? So that those are the two things that, you know, is put to task when we are faced with such a problem like a pandemic. Because very often the secular world is self-centered, like it's my safety. Or we deflect the attention towards, you know, what bothers us, what concerns us. It's vaccine and how it's harmful for me, the side effects of people died, you know. It's about, once again, it's about me. But then the point of view is, it's not about me, but it's about the man on the street and the love that I need to show, the Christ love that I need to show. So these are the tests that, like, he recognized these two things as the most important thing when you're faced with a plague. And then we also have Henry Martin, and he was a missionary to India in 1812. And he died in a plague when he was 31. And this is what he wrote. And he says, I am immortal. Probably you must have heard this. I am immortal till Christ's work for me to do is done. And so this goes to for any Christian, like you and I are immortal till Christ's work for us is done. Like, our work on earth is done. Till that time, like, nothing's going to happen. Whatever God wants me to do, He will empower me. He will strengthen me. And he was out on the mission field, so he had this zeal, and he died at the age of 31. And you can say, a Christian is immortal. You can see that slogan again and again. Any thoughts on that? Like, how we have changed the narrative. Like, we have changed our focus on some other things, rather than how the early church responded to a situation like a plague. It's totally different. Even though they were debating about whether it's ethical to run away from a plague, if you had the means, but then still predominantly many of them, the church built its reputation for love and care wherever they went. It could be the mission organizations. The first thing they did was to care for the poor. It's true of, what's her name, Mother Teresa, when she came to Calcutta. These are people, the untouchables and lepers on the street, dying, nobody to care for, even their own family members will not take them into their houses. And then she comes from Albania, none, and then goes with them and eats with them, lives with them, brings them back to her house. and gives them a comfortable, a dignified death. And you can see the impact that she has on that city. So Christianity has this reputation for this. But for me, like when I look about, think about this, this is what is, we are different. Like the way we have responded is different. Because we, at least like maybe these things happen in some parts, but not the the main objective. The Christians, we respond in church and leaders and, you know, YouTube videos or social media posts. It's all about us, me, and my health and my safety.
It sounds like you have something you want to say, Saul. So, I mean, is it just that that you're seeing that Christians have responded more like the world than like the early church? Is that what you're trying to
say? Yeah. And, well, I was kind of saving it for the last, but since you asked, I was wondering the global church. How did the global church respond? And we talk about the church in America responding one way, but how did the church globally respond to this? That's one of the questions there as well. How did the missions respond to COVID? Because this was a global phenomenon. It's not just in the US. It's not just Biden or Robert President Trump. It was global. Everybody. People are still in lockdown. People are still in shutdown. And how did the mission? Missions, they have to go on outreach, meet with people, eat with people. That's the mission. How did they respond to COVID?
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you. I mean, so just staying in touch with people in other countries, what did you hear?
Absolutely.
What was the response? Because we're so insulated, it seems like, a lot of times, to what's happening right here in America, is if everything revolves around America, it's a big world out there, and lots of other Christians. And so, yeah. What was the response?
Yeah, it's, from all the stuff I've been seeing, and I don't know how many Christians are the ones participating, but it seems like most of the organizations that are charitable, they didn't suffer. Like all their goals, they were reached and exceeded during this whole pandemic when people had less and everything was harder to get and access. It seems like every organization, if they set a goal to raise $500,000, they exceeded it. And I don't know how many Christians were involved in it, but that's like a real positive spiritual, you know, goal and blessing, is that maybe there's a lot of people that were reached by the Holy Spirit and were motivated to give when they had less themselves that year anyways. But it doesn't seem like anybody that was running any type of organization or anything charitable,
yeah,
that they suffered. It's like people exceeded during this whole pandemic problem, that a lot of people, their eyes might have been opened or reopened from what they knew growing up. Or it's, it just seems like that's one positive thing that came out of all this, that
people seem to
want to do more and be more Christ-like. Maybe these were Christians that were sitting on their duff, and or maybe they weren't. Maybe these are secular people. But it seems like people were charitable during this entire pandemic.
Yeah. Whenever there is need, Christians always step up. And this was true in the global world as well, global church as well. A lot of missions, they were hit pretty hard because of this. They could not go out and do their ministry the way they used to do, going into people's homes and breaking bread with them. They couldn't do all those things. So they were the ones that were severely affected. But besides that, the suffering of the people because of the lockdowns, if they don't go to work, in many third world countries, that's the reality. If they don't go to work that day, they don't eat. So that's how it was. And then you also have a lot of displacement where people from, especially in India, people from North India, they come and work in South India. And now there is a lockdown. There is no job. What do? There is no transportation to go back to your house. So migrants, they walked thousands of miles from South India to North India. It's one long line of migrants with babies and children in tow, carrying their bags, walking. And this became such a big national spectacle, and Christian missions, they kind of stepped up. They used WhatsApp, the tool, and they came together and followed these migrants. The churches took care of them all along their way, feeding them, clothing them, giving them place to sleep. It was the church, and everybody watched. Everybody watched. That's one. The other one was the poor in the community. Once again, it was the church. the church had bags of rice and the monthly, you know, groceries that they needed. So they used to go out and volunteer to give out, just like our food pantry here. They go out into the communities. This is when people are not supposed to go out. You might be, you know, beaten by the police, you know, if you get caught, but that's what they did, because people have to eat. So they go out, they distribute a lot of bags of rice and stuff like that. So the church was, involved in so many of these charitable events across the globe. That's what, you know, their response. For us, like, it's the first world privilege to, you know, talk about vaccines and masks. We have our opinions to this and that. We don't worry about everyday food. Maybe some do. That's not our primary concern. We had government give us money and, you know, so our concerns were different. But then the church, you know, in the world at large, they had different concerns and they responded differently. And that was something, heartening to see that the church still has its place in the world. And I don't know, this time, very quickly, all right, just to provoke some thoughts, all right. I had some, say, when you talk about ethical concerns, you have to have this, what we call logical consistency in our arguments, right? One thing, I'm going back to mask, forgive me. But when you play a game, you can't be moving the post, right? The goal post and play the game. So I just want to give a couple of quotes and then tell me if it is consistent when it comes to other ethical issues. The position that we hold for one issue has to hold ground for the other issue as well, all right? So let's see. The first one, it's interesting. I don't have the answer. Just to get you some thoughts to think on these things as to what the world is thinking about some of our positions on issues that matter to us. Number one, how can the church say it is pro-life when its members don't wear a mask or vaccinate or even maintain social distance during the middle of the pandemic? The church is pro-life, big time, all right? So the question is, how can the church say it is pro-life when its members don't wear a mask or vaccinate or even maintain social distance during the middle of the pandemic?
Because everyone's faith is in God, not in everything else that has been told them.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
Well, abortion is an actual act of murder where if you may or may not get COVID. I mean, you may or may not get sick. It's hit or miss.
Right.
One's a risk, one's a certainty.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. The second one, going along with abortion, all right? If you want the government to respect your choice and your right to wear a mask, I'll repeat. If you want the government to respect your choice and your rights to wear a mask or get vaccinated, then shouldn't you extend the same courtesy to women who seek abortion rights? I'll read it again.
No.
If you want the government to respect your choice and your rights to wear a mask or get vaccinated, then shouldn't you extend the same courtesy to women who seek abortion rights?
No. Because we're doing it for a reason, you know, above the government. The government just wants control. Well, we are separate, and no, we shouldn't allow the government to do it if we can stop it.
You can also turn that argument around to say, if the government is so vigilant to want to give everybody their rights or their choices, why are they so opposed to
the baby's rights?
Well, or just to the rights of, like, if I want to choose to do this as far as vaccinate or not vaccinate. Yeah. If they want everybody else to have a choice, well, why are they restricting this choice? Yeah. You know? So they're not being consistent.
Yeah, we are not consistent and they're not consistent as well. You can turn around this argument back and forth as well. But this one has kind of stumped me, the second one, all right? The third one I'm going to read, and I didn't know. Just want to hear your answer. Eternity is settled for us, right? It is far better to depart and be with Christ. So the worst that could ever happen to us would be the best that could ever happen to us. Okay? The worst that could ever happen to us would be the best that could ever happen to us. Now, so far, so good. Shouldn't you make the same claim when it comes to gun control? I'll read it again. eternity settles for, I have no fear of dying. Right? I have no fear of dying. So the worst that can happen to me is the best that could happen to me. I'm glad when I die, I go to heaven. I'm not scared of death. God will protect me. So far, so good. But how do we apply this when it comes to gun control? Like, why do we have guns? Because I want to protect myself. That's the number one argument. But, so, you see the problem there.
You mean,
can we use this?
You mean gun rights?
Gun rights, yeah.
Okay, like talking about the right to bear arms.
Yeah.
Not necessarily gun control. But gun control is taken away.
Okay.
Constitution.
A gun right, meaning like, if you get, why worry about someone coming into your house and shooting you? What, because your ultimate goal is to go to heaven anyway, so.
But guns aren't only for your own right. Guns are protection because there was one church in Texas quite a while ago that a guy came in and started shooting. And if those people didn't have a gun and shot him, they would have killed a lot more people. So it's also a protection place. I mean, I believe in gun rights. I wish I could have one.
I took an ethics class one time, and a pretty well-known teacher that I had, him, Russell Moore, he answered this question because somebody asked him about gun ownership or something. And he said, and I, you know, it's worth wrestling with, that as far as himself is concerned, he would not protect his own life. He would allow somebody to take his own life. But in the protection of others, he would be willing to defend them, but he would lose his own life. So as far as just, if it's just him in the house, okay. But if there are other people there to protect, he will do so. And so as far as what that means, gun ownership, I don't know. I guess you can own a gun and just not use it if somebody were to break in and it's just me. But if somebody else, his kids, the weak, the powerless, whoever that is. So as far as Mary's concerned here, if somebody comes into a church, you're not worried about your own life. You are there to protect the lives of other people. So in that regard, he saw it as being admirable and right and biblical. But for his own life, no.
It seems like in the Bible, like when the Egyptians, when they were ordered to kill the babies, the midwives, they were willing to go against orders to save their lives, but
they were putting their own lives at risk.
Right.
And not worried necessarily about, you know, so I think
so the places I see in the Bible where somebody defied orders from government or that king or whatever, it was always to save somebody else's life, not just their
own. Rahab, same thing. It's the protection of someone else's life and the expense of it.
I think the gun ownership is to be a deterrent. It's not to stop someone from killing you, because if someone's coming into your house, they're usually looking for thievery, not for murder. And also, you know, with government getting too big for their britches, if the people have enough power to fight back, then it's a deterrent more than necessarily light protection.
Right. Something to think about. There are no answers here. There are. I didn't have an answer for this question as well. But you know, when we talk about protection is from God, then are we consistent with this claim that my protection is from God on all topics or only for some topics? Something to think about. All right. But this is more real. One of the struggles that many Christians have during this time is, what does it truly mean to love our neighbor? As the Bible teaches in these new situations.
Or what does it truly mean to do not fear? Are we afraid to be consistent? What are we afraid of? Guns? Are we afraid of abortion? Are we afraid of getting pregnant? Are we afraid of vaccines? Are we afraid of masks? Like,
this is a real struggle for many Christians in so many ways. They have responded to this question, but something to think about. We are called to love. We are called to sacrifice. We are called to, you know, give our lives up for the sake of others. So this is something that to think about. What does it really mean, you know, to love?
I know you're about to close, but I wanted to say something before I heard you. I have given thanks to God again and again through all of this for how I know there are opinions everybody holds inside of our congregation, but it has not been a divisive church. I have heard horror stories about what has happened in churches around this country where people have been so divided as people with one another. At the very least, we've had a church with self-control. So that I know their opinions, but we have not divided and continue to worship the Lord. And I think that God has given a lot of grace through all of this. And I was very thankful for our church.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Once again, very quickly, like some lessons on COVID, like what can we learn from COVID? Otherwise, we will just waste of time or waste of experience. If God is trying to teach us something through this, or we can learn something through this. If there is something that we have learned as Christians, what would that be? One or two ideas, the big lessons that we can learn as we go through this experience.
Man can't do anything because now they want a third shot.
Okay.
I mean,
right.
You know,
man's.
We only have one person to depend on. Right. You know.
Okay. Anything else? We can't trust man. Anything else that we can learn?
I mean, if anything with the COVID, I mean, I think what you could do is. What I've learned is just to reach out to people and just, you know, if you need something, you know, just to reach out and be mindful of other people.
Caring, once again, caring, that's a big step. Just to ask that question means so much, especially people when people are isolated, that they can count on somebody if they need anything. Yeah. Okay. Anything that we can learn from this as Christians?
Yeah, we're always thinking me, 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 and now we're thinking.
Yeah.
Other people.
Yeah. It shows us, it convicts us at some level that we are not doing what we are called to do, that we should be doing more. It might even show that we are very self-centered in at so many levels, that we need to go out, step out, sacrificially give and take risks for God in faith, put our trust in God. There's so many things that we can, that we need to learn through this as well. And then it's also, death is real. Our lives on earth is short. Can happen anytime. So just got to set our house in order. We can't, you know, plan. We should not, we should not fail to plan for eternity. It can happen anytime. We see, like yesterday, somebody was good, was safe, and then next thing you know, next week they're in the hospital, and then they're not anymore. You know, so the whole, how life is so fragile, you know, it's the fragility of life. That's been hit home hard. That we cannot count on anything, not our position or money or where we are, even our health. You know, we're not so healthy after all. It's just one virus. And somebody said, it's just a dollar. You can, you know, wash off this virus with a soap that you can get in a dollar store, you know, but then see how much damage it can do to economy, to people, millions across the world. So a simple thing, the unseen virus and the kind of damage it can do to life. So it kind of puts us in our place. You know, we, in spite of all our advancements in technology and things like that, we don't stand a chance against these things. If you want to read more, read science fiction. This has been written in the 1980s, where there are ghost towns, and they present such a bleak and dark picture in science fiction. Yeah. Anything else that we can learn? God is still on the throne. Nothing is an accident. And he is doing something. Missions. God can use COVID through the furthering of his missions on the global missions. I don't know if you know, there are so many places people are going to church, especially WhatsApp groups have thrived during COVID time. There have been online prayers and revival prayers and so many prayers and pastors and intercession. People are crying out to God in so many places. So we'll never know until we go to heaven. We'll never know what is God doing and the good that came out of this. But if there is anybody who can bring beauty out of ashes, it is God. And we'll just put our faith in him and trust him and be obedient to his call in our lives to show his love to our neighbors around us, right? Anything else you want to add, or otherwise we can close?
I think COVID also showed God more in the world with miracles that you saw happen. things that the doctors couldn't explain or anyone couldn't explain that happened, and it might have created more believers out of the pandemic.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Miracles do still do happen. I mean, yeah, lives are being changed. Yeah. Well, can anyone pray and then we'll close?